Welcome to the Storycraft Cafe. Come in, grab a cup of your favorite beverage, and get ready to join the storytelling conversation. Storycraft Cafe is brought to you by Dabble, the ultimate cloud-based fiction writing software. Here we're going to bring together storytellers from all walks to encourage and empower you to craft your best story. Part 2, Writing Your First Draft. Chapter 4, Elements of a Story. Stories are sort of like houses. They require quality materials and a strong foundation to make them great. Sure, you can use subpar materials, but the house, in this metaphor, your story, will be hollow, weak, and filled with holes. Throughout Part 2, I'll be giving you a tour through the key elements that come together to make the story you've been dreaming of. Along the way, I'll be suggesting different ways to improve these elements and make them as great as they can possibly be. You should understand up front, though, that an awesome story doesn't just appear out of nowhere on your blank page. Sorry, that's just the truth. Remember that the only way to write a killer book is to actually write. So these next chapters are going to equip you with the tools you need to make sure your key elements are strong enough to share your dream with the world. Over the following three chapters, we'll cover the fundamental elements of every story: characters, plot, and theme. Characters are what bring stories to life. You can have an amazing story to tell, but it will fall flat if your characters aren't well developed. If you think about your favorite stories, whether they're books, movies, etc., what are the most memorable parts? Odds are you remember the characters, or if not them directly, the choices and actions of those characters. In Chapter 5, we're going to drill down on what makes characters great and how you can craft the characters your story deserves. Plot is the actual story you're telling. Just like a good plot relies on good characters, you can have amazing characters, but your story simply won't work if you have a weak plot. We've already covered the very basics of the beginning, middle, and end of your story in your head, but Chapter 6 will expand on those further to give you a strong grasp of the major plot points of your book. Theme is an element of storytelling that is often overlooked by most first-time writers. A theme is a universal truth that your story is trying to tell. It is the message behind the action, intrigue, characters, and every other piece of writing prowess you've put into your story. Without a theme, your story will feel meaningless and shallow. Sure, you can have great characters and an engaging plot, but a theme ties the whole thing together with a nice bow that makes your book more than just another story. In Chapter 7, I'll give you the tools to craft the perfect theme. If you're a pantser and reading this, you might be shaking your head in disgust or trembling in fear at the idea of planning. Keep in mind that I've written this book for all sorts of writers and have included options for plotters and pantsers throughout. Follow along with all the exercises I've included. They are there to make you a stronger writer. Remember that very few people are just plotters or pantsers, and you will only really find where you land if you try out all the different options available to you. Before moving on to the excitement of characters, plot, and theme, there are a few other elements to quickly go over that aren't necessarily as complex as those three. Point of view. Who is telling your story? That's the question that our point of view, or POV, answers. Choosing your POV for your story is a decision that's more important than you might think. The way in which a story is told can drastically change how well it's received by an audience, how much emotional weight you can inject into it, how many subplots you can manage, and more. But for many first-time or inexperienced authors, choosing the current POV and using it properly can be difficult. There are a lot of intricacies involved in proper POV use, but I'm going to break down the four different viewpoints you can use in your book so you can see, get it, things more clearly. First-person point of view. The most intimate point of view, first person, gives us a look directly into the mind of the narrator. In this POV, the narrator is telling the story from their perspective, using pronouns like I and we. First person is such a powerful way of telling a story because it's how humans naturally share experiences. Telling your partner about your day at work or reliving past glory days with your oldest friends all involve first-person retelling of tales. This perspective is natural and comfortable for us. In addition to that, no other point of view immerses a reader as much as first-person storytelling does. You become connected to the narrator much more than any other perspective, which directly translates to you caring for, or in the case of an antagonist, reviling or even sympathizing with them. For mysteries, thrillers, horror, and other suspenseful genres, first person also limits the amount of information we can gather from the narrator. We only know what they know. So if there is something terrifying hiding under the bed that they can't see, we can't see it either. Likewise, we won't know who murdered the butler until our narrator leads us through the detective work they're doing. Most importantly, first-person narration is influenced by the narrator themselves. It has more of their voice, quirks, and flaws than any other narration style. Other popular POVs, specifically third-person, will never be able to achieve this level of characterization in the voice that tells your story. Second-person point of view. Up next is the strange uncle in the family. This point of view is the one that's there and sometimes makes sense, but most of the time you're just confused or overwhelmed by what they're saying. Second-person narration is the least used style in writing. In this style, you're using you and your pronouns to draw the reader into the story. You are essentially telling the reader that they are a character in the story. It's a tough one to balance properly, mostly because you're asking your readers to imagine a lot. When it's done perfectly, it's very engrossing, but it is very difficult to ask a reader to become an actual part of your story. This perspective is best saved for shorter pieces of work, like short stories or poetry, or for those awesome choose-your-own-adventure books that we all loved when we were younger. How come no one writes those for adults? It has also been put to great effect in small amounts within a larger work, like in a scene or chapter. For most books, though, especially if it's your first, it's best to choose another POV. Third-person limited point of view. Third-person perspective is broken up into two different types, limited and omniscient. Let's tackle the most common POV, third-person limited, first. Stories are told in third person when they use pronouns like he, she, and they. Everybody who has read a few books in their life has read a third-person narrated book. This point of view becomes limited when the perspective of the narrator is confined to one character at a time. This means that we only have access to the thoughts, feelings, and emotions of one character, no matter how many are in the scene. That's how the perspective becomes limited. Both forms of third-person narration, limited and omniscient, allow a reader to become more familiar with the story more quickly. While first-person adds a layer of characterization to your storytelling, third-person means that your reader doesn't have to adapt to an unfamiliar voice. The restricted nature of third-person limited POV is a strength, too. Like first-person, it makes the story more intimate. You get a look into the head of one particular character, get to know them better, empathize with them, and root for them. The story is not diluted with a flood of different thoughts. To this end, third-person limited also makes suspense and surprises easier to write. If you're limited to one character's perspective in a scene, you can't possibly know what's behind the door they're about to open. Third-person limited also allows you to change the narrator, depending on the scene. With this style of narration, you can write one scene from your protagonist's POV, another told through a secondary character, and a third from your antagonist's perspective. Be very careful with head hopping, though. It should never be done within a scene, i.e., if you start a scene limited to one character's perspective, you cannot switch to another perspective in the same scene. It should be done with a purpose. Why are you telling the story from this character's perspective? What is it adding to your reader's experience? Being able to tell the story from the perspective of multiple characters, when done right, is a powerful way to add depth to those characters and to your work. Third-person omniscient point of view. Less common than its limited counterpart, third-person omniscient storytelling isn't restricted to the thoughts and feelings of one character at a time. In these stories, the narrator is all-seeing and detached from the story. They can share what each character is thinking, giving us a clearer picture of what's going on. The storytelling style can also add suspense, known as dramatic irony. The reader, thanks to the all-seeing narrator, can know things that the characters don't. In books with dramatic irony, you might find yourself clenching your teeth and begging the characters to turn around and spot the killer lurking in the shadows. An omniscient narrator sort of becomes a character of their own. They might have their own quirks, interjections, and remarks that add to the story without actually influencing it. This characterization grants you a unique addition to your story that third-person limited can't offer. The downside is that third-person omniscient perspective removes the intimacy with characters that all other POVs offer. You might understand more characters, but connecting them is a lot more difficult when you're experiencing the story through a detached narrator. This POV can also lead to passive writing and telling the reader rather than showing them, which is what we're going to chat about after these quick tips on choosing a point of view for your story. POV tips. Remember, choosing a POV is an important part of creating the perfect story. You might already have an idea of which one you want to use, or maybe you're on the fence. Either way, here are some questions to keep in mind when deciding on your narrator's point of view. Which genre are you writing for, and what POV do most books use? Are you looking for intimacy between the characters and the reader? Are thoughts and insights from characters important to the story? What tone do you use in your writing? Do you need to tell the story from the perspective of multiple characters? Active versus passive writing. It's very difficult to tell someone how to objectively write better. As a creative art, there will never be a consensus on what makes one style of writing better than another. Some people will always prefer one style over another, and it's that uniqueness that makes you stand out as an author. But, and I want you to really draw out that pronunciation for me, there is a consensus among writers and editors that active writing is generally, though not always, better than passive writing. If you've never heard of active and passive writing or just need a reminder, here are some definitions. Active writing is when the subject of a sentence is performing the action. Passive writing is when the subject of a sentence is acted upon. But to understand those, we need three more definitions, but they're simple ones. And who doesn't love a good definition or five? Subject, the person, place, or thing that is doing something. Verb, an action. Object, the person, place, or thing being acted upon. A complete sentence has a subject and a verb, otherwise it's a sentence fragment. Here's an example of a complete sentence. Julia kicked. Julia is the subject, kicked is the verb. We can also add an object to provide more details. Julia kicked the ball. In this sentence, the object is the ball. That sentence just so happens to be an example of active writing too. The subject does something to the object. But here's another way of writing that same sentence. The ball was kicked by Julia. In this sentence, the subject is now the ball, the action is being kicked, and the object is Julia. But now the object, Julia, is acting on the subject. To be clear, there is nothing inherently wrong with that sentence. The issue with passive writing is that it's murkier, more convoluted, and slower paced than active writing. We don't gain anything from the rewritten sentence other than more words and some strange phrasing. Active writing, on the other hand, pushes the flow of your story forward and is easier to understand. It's straightforward and doesn't bog the reader down. In most cases, active writing is preferred. That's because too much passive writing slows your book's pace to a crawl, and most readers don't like that. In certain genres, passive writing can be helpful by adding details, controlling the tone of your writing. intentionally slowing your pace and adding ambiguity to things. Passive writing is also okay when the subject is unknown or irrelevant. Sometimes it doesn't matter who baked a pie, only that the pie was baked. Sweet, sweet pie. You have passive writing in your book. This book has passive writing in it. Remember, passive writing is okay in moderation. But using it too often will make your book harder to read and less engaging, so keep a lookout for these sentences in your writing and make sure that you're benefiting from them being there. An easy way to identify most passive sentences is to look for the will be, to be, by, or has been in your writing. These are often indicators of passive writing. Your writing will grow stronger over time, too. Don't be discouraged if you find a lot of passive writing in your first draft. It's just an opportunity to grow. That's something to keep in mind throughout the entire writing process. This is just your first draft. For some folks reading this, it will be the first time you've ever written an entire book. There will be amazing parts. There will be absolutely awful parts. Celebrate the former, don't stress about the latter. Not homework. What POV will you use? Before we hop into characters, it's time to start thinking about what POV you're going to use in your book. I just bombarded you with a lot of information about your narrator's potential perspective. Did any of them resonate with you? Did any of them make you want to learn more? If you already had an idea of the POV you want to use, did any of the other perspectives seem interesting, or did they just reinforce your ideas? Think back to the questions that came up in this chapter. Which genre are you writing for, and what POV do most books use? Are you looking for intimacy between the characters and the reader? Which POV feels more natural for you to write in? Are thoughts and insights from characters important to your story? What tone do you use in your writing? Do you need to tell the story from the perspective of multiple characters? Before you go on, jot down which POV you will be using. This isn't set in stone and might be something you change as you write your first draft, but it is good to have an idea of what POV you want to use before you write. Chapter 5. Craft Complex Characters. A story is nothing without amazing characters. Some might argue that is a subjective statement, but I don't hang out with those sorts of people. Last chapter, I asked you to think about your favorite books and how awesome and memorable the characters were. If that didn't convince you, try this. Name three of your favorite books where the characters were bad. Not bad like the Joker or the club members in Sons of Anarchy. No, bad meaning poorly written, unrelatable, shallow, or just plain boring. If you can name three books with those sorts of characters that you love, you get an imaginary gold star. But I'm confident I won't be handing out many of those. That's because characters are just as important to a story as the plot is. Over this chapter and the two that follow, we'll be covering characters, plot, and theme. That's because a good story boils down to the following formula: complex characters plus perfect plot plus tantalizing themes equals a good story. Yes, I obviously went for alliterations there because that's fun. And yes, there are more things that go into writing a book like POV and your writing skills. But as long as you've got a decent grip on writing in your language and a good editor, are open to feedback, and are willing to put in the work, then strong characters, plot, and theme will result in a story that people will enjoy reading. If you don't put in the effort into all three of those components, however, then you won't end up with a memorable story. Characters can be especially difficult for writers to get right. It's easy to have bland, two-dimensional characters and think you can get away with it. In this chapter, I'm going to make sure that you develop complex, interesting characters to live in your book and bring your story to life. Character basics. You can't understand the top secret arcane knowledge of characters without first understanding the basics, so let's start there. The main or primary characters of your book are the ones who drive the story forward, even if they aren't necessarily working together. There are two types of main characters, protagonist and antagonist. Protagonists are the heroes in your story. These are the main characters who have their world changed and decide to work towards a goal, growing along the way and usually accomplishing that goal, or at least a goal, by the end of the book. You can have multiple protagonists as long as doing so serves a purpose and you invest in all of them to make them worth reading about. Antagonists are the opposite. In some cases, they are villains, while some antagonists are simply getting in the way of the protagonist's goals rather than actively working against them. This means that some books have antagonists that are characters, i.e. the White Witch and the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, while some antagonists are more existential or metaphorical, i.e. the apocalyptic movie where a natural disaster is working against the characters. After main characters, you have secondary characters. These types of characters can fall on either side of the good versus evil spectrum or anywhere in between. Secondary characters still play an important, notable role in your story, but aren't where you will shine most of the spotlight. They might show up in just one or two scenes, or they might help out in half the scenes in the book. The best secondary characters have their own subplots to add more depth to your story. Secondary characters might not feel that important at first, but most books will feel empty without them. No matter what genre you're writing, you're creating a world for readers to get lost in, and a world with only two or three main characters is pretty bleak. When writing secondary characters, it's crucial to remember that they are still characters and as such deserve as much character development as main characters, even if there are some details that never make it into the book. They deserve to have goals, flaws, quirks, and personalities. Authors who don't provide them with the love and attention they need will quickly find that their readers aren't connecting with those characters or the story as a whole. Moving farther away from the spotlight brings us to minor or tertiary characters. Unlike secondary characters, minor characters usually don't play a significant role in the story. They are background characters that add substance to your world without bogging the story down. Some will be named, some won't. Some will be nothing more than a smiling face in a coffee shop, while others might be poverty-stricken children in your dystopian cyberpunk city. Tertiary characters add substance to the world more than the story. Occasionally, one of them might say or do something that will help the protagonist or antagonist, but minor characters rarely show up in more than one scene. They also don't require much depth or attention. If you force your reader to focus on tertiary characters too much, they will expect them to play a bigger role in the story. Stories are about conflict. Conflict comes from characters. Every story is about some kind of conflict. Somebody wants something, other things get in their way. That's an incredibly simple way of describing stories, but it's true. In order to have conflict, you need characters to experience it. Therefore, conflict is contingent on characters. These conflicts can be external or internal. External conflict occurs between a character and someone or something else. Your protagonist and antagonist clashing. A character braving a hurricane to rescue their child. A princess slaying a dragon. These conflicts happen outside of a character, thus they're considered external. Internal conflict is the opposite. This type of conflict occurs inside someone's thoughts or heart. Do I really need to choose between the vampire and the werewolf? Will I ever live up to my father's expectations? Do I want a seventh slice of pizza? Your story can have either external or internal conflict. It can even have both and multiple kinds of each. But there should be one major conflict that you choose to be the focus of your book, while other conflicts are saved for subplots. If you want to become an expert on the different types of conflict within external and internal, I've got your back over here. Go to www.dabblewriter.com/articles/4-types-of-conflict. Take a moment to think about the story you want to write. What is the bigger conflict you're writing about? What characters, that you know of right now anyway, are critical to that conflict? Every character has an arc. So we've established that conflicts are central to stories and that characters are what drive conflict. But what effect does conflict have on characters? As a character changes throughout a story, we call that a character arc. These arcs represent the journey that our characters go through from the moment they are first introduced to their last scene in the book. It's this change that is driven by conflict, because people, or non-human entities, if that's your genre, don't like changing if we don't have to. In every story, main and secondary characters should each experience their own character arc. It is not mandatory for some secondary characters, but the entire purpose of an arc is to make a character stand out and make them meaningful to us. We want to be able to cheer for them, be shocked by them, cry because of them, and more. It's the change our characters go through that makes them memorable. When planning or writing your characters, there are four different arcs that you can have them experience: moral ascending, moral descending, transformational, and flat. Moral ascending character arcs. This is probably the most common and most heartwarming of the character arcs. A moral ascending arc is marked by a character pushing past their flaws and obstacles, fear, perceived weakness, a fight with a friend, the dark side of the force, to accomplish their goals. It's a hobbit faced with a dragon. It's realizing the key was friendship all along. It's showing your high school classmates that you're really the hot one after all these years by being your true self. Moral ascending characters inspire us to make us root for them because they are trying to overcome something. That sort of arc, whether facing a monster, a draconian boss, or a schoolyard bully, is something almost everyone can relate to. It can apply to villains too. Who doesn't love a good redemption story? Moral descending character arcs. Not every story has a happy ending, though. Moral descending arcs are the exact opposite of an ascending arc. They are not the descent into madness, the embracing of power and greed. In a moral descending character arc, the character ends in a morally worse place than they began. Moral descending arcs can be a lot of fun to read and write if done properly. Casting off societal expectations or making blood pacts with extra-dimensional entities are both examples of descending arcs, negative actions that benefit the character personally. Again, both protagonist and antagonist can have their own descending arcs. There is no sure ending for this type of arc either. Selfishly acquiring power can lead to madness, but it can also lead to complete satisfaction for a character. Maybe they just want to rule the world. Transformational character arcs. Sometimes characters change, but their morals stay the same. Katniss Everdeen from The Hunger Games didn't necessarily have her morals changed throughout the books, but she did become a much more accomplished leader, revolutionary, and archer. Luke Skywalker started as a kind farmer on Tatooine and ended Star Wars as a nice Jedi. We're talking original trilogy here, please. A transformational arc sees the character changing in some way while more or less retaining the morals they had at the start of the story. The lawful good paladin becomes stronger to slay a dragon. A grassroots organization works really hard to grow bigger. Come the end of the story, the character should be a different version of themselves. Flat character arcs. What a contradictory name, right? Flat arcs don't have any change from beginning to end. Instead, opting to stay exactly where they were when it comes to their power or morals. This type of arc isn't exciting or relatable, so you have to use it wisely. It can be helpful in episodic storytelling, like a television show or a serial of short stories. In these episodes, the characters might not change between the beginning and end of each story segment. Odds are, though, you will see them change throughout the entire season or set of stories. Flat arcs can also be applied to secondary characters who aren't as important or influential as some others in the book. Your wise wizarding headmaster might just be that for the entirety of their story. If you choose to use a flat character arc, make sure that the characters you're applying it to don't take up too much screen time in your book, or you might end up boring your readers. Bring your characters to life. Remember when I said that there would be some options along the way for plotters and pantsers? Here's one of those options. I present to you three gifts: a character trait list, a character interview, and a character profile. These three resources can be used as little or as much as you want to bring your characters to life. People who lean more towards the plotting side will want to know everything about their characters. Even if those details are never used in the story, you still want to know things like what your protagonist had for breakfast on the third Wednesday of January 1985. That might be a little extreme, but the more details, the better. To that end, the character trait list contains more than 100 possible details you might think of for your character. You definitely don't need to fill out each one, and some of them might not be applicable to your genre, but you can choose which ones you want to include and which ones you don't. The character interview gives you the opportunity to plunge into the depths of your character's histories, personalities, and more. Honestly, you'll end up knowing them better than your best friend. Finally, the character profile will wrap up everything neatly and organize all the essential elements of your character. It's a great resource to have just a click away. Pantsers might think that the list of details a plotter creates is way overboard. Like we just hit an iceberg, and there's no room on this floating door overboard. There was totally room on that door. For the pantsers out there, feel free to fill out whatever details you think you want from the resources included. Again, you might only use two or three questions, or you might use all of them from the interview, but they are there to encourage some deeper thinking about your characters to give you a better understanding of them without spending time listing dozens of individual details. No matter where you fall on the plotter pantser spectrum, take a look at the three character resources at the end of this chapter. Figure out what you like about each one, because I'm going to get you to use them soon. Character synopses. Before we get to your next not homework, there's one other tool I want to share that can help you understand your characters even more. Character synopses. An idea that originated from Randy Ingermanson's snowflake method of planning a novel, a character synopsis is pretty straightforward. The idea is to take each of your main and secondary characters and write a summary of your story from their perspective. Main characters should get about a page for their summaries, while secondary characters only need about half a page. This might sound tedious, especially to pantsers, but it helps on so many levels. First, it gives you a better understanding of each storyline and subplot that you're trying to include. That, in turn, lets you look for any plot holes you might have missed. Most importantly, it gives you a thorough understanding of each of your important characters, how they contribute to your book, and the arcs that each of them go on. Without understanding your plot, which we will cover in the next chapter, it isn't worth writing a character synopsis for any character yet. But keep this powerful tool in mind once you have a better grasp of your story if you want to get new insights into your creation. For now, check out your not homework and the three resources for building amazing characters. Not homework. Create your protagonist and antagonist. It's time to bring everything you've learned in this chapter together to make your protagonist and antagonist the two most important characters in your story. Now, your story might not have a character as the antagonist, or it might have multiple. Your protagonist might actually be a villain or an anti-hero. You do you. This is your story. Whatever the case is, I want you to have as good an understanding of your main character as possible before moving on to the next chapter. If you're using Dabble to write your book, we make that very easy by providing you with a place to house all your character notes. Whether you just want one page to completely describe your character or a folder to include the traits list, interview, profile, synopsis, eventually, inspiration, etc., you can do that in Dabble. So get to know them. Here are some ways to do that. Write down as many of the character traits for your main characters as you want. Complete a character interview for each main character. Fill out a character profile for your protagonist and antagonist. Summarize each character's arc in two or three sentences, or more if you're feeling ambitious. Include some photos or images that inspire this character. These can include the physical traits, goals, skills, etc. Pro tip, you can add images to your story notes in Dabble. Include a spot for a character synopsis for each main character. Don't fill it out quite yet, but consider returning to your outline once you've finished up your plot. Pantsers, you definitely don't have to do all of those. In fact, I'd be shocked if most plotters even hit all these points. I suggest that everyone, especially if this book is your first book, fills out the character profiles. That will give you a great start to your story. Read over the character traits list, interview, and profile included in the email you received with this book. That's our episode for today. There's so much more to come as we talk with authors about the craft of writing, but also the business of publishing. Be sure to subscribe to the Storycraft Cafe podcast in your favorite podcast app to never miss an episode. The Storycraft Cafe is made possible by Dabble. Writing a book is challenging. Your writing tool shouldn't be. Dabble is an easy-to-use online writing tool packed with helpful features that allow beginning novelists and published authors to create amazing stories. Visit us at dabblewriter.com and start your free trial. Thanks for listening.